crackers to the hackers and the crackers. I see in binary, I speak source code. Step on my toes, I'll post a million JPEGs of you in a fag pose. In your digital stance, sitting firewalls, ho. Cause I'm riding the net in my 6-4. I was a dick with my 56. Now with my cable, I'm able to get that stable. On the out, my name is Ace and I'm a Leo. On the digital highway, my name is Neo and I'm a hero. In a flash, I'll fool you on Bergen Dreamcast. You need some ISO? Let me do my hard drive rifle. Our exchange you could never stifle. In a digital hood, you just caught the love bug. I bootlegged your CD. I caused the fight between Un and Jay-Z. You see, G, it's all gonna be free. Whether we take it by force or we take it nicely. You feel that rattle in your bones? When I tell you we just hacked Dow Jones? And NASDAQ leaves you flat on your back? Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack.
Dedicated to the hackers and the crew. Stereo code, source code, ISO, RAM, SIP, SIP.
Hello, and welcome to Binary Revolution Radio, episode... What episode number is this?
I have no idea. I'm just trying not to yell out boogers or anything at the beginning this time.
Yeah, isn't it weird? I think this is a 180, actually. This is somewhat of a milestone.
Why is this a milestone?
I don't know.
Oh, because it's...
It's engine of zero.
Oh, so it's an even number, and that's a milestone?
No, it's always a milestone.
By 5. Anything divisible by 10 to me is a cool number.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's what I think, too, yeah. So this is 180.
Well, you know what, since we're on that topic, and I always go into these tangents, let me tell you about a weird little personality quirk, or not personality, a weird little thing I have, a little obsession or something. Tell me if this is just a weird stank thing here, but, like, I can find significance in almost every number. Like, I can look over at a clock, and... there'll be, like, significance to the number. Sometimes it's simple things like it's 123. So it's 123. It's an obvious number with some significance to it. Other times I'll look over and it's, like, 314. And I'm like, oh, look, it's pi. It's pi time, you know? Or every time, like, I call Decoder on the phone at 1111 at night all the time. I'll look over. It's, oh, it's 1111. I'll call and I'll go, happy default. And he's like, what the fuck is it?
Oh, I totally do that. I always do default time. Oh, like, because 11:11 to, like, when you're a kid, oh, it's picket fence time. No, it's default time now.
Default time, yeah, I do that in IRC a lot. I'll go, happy default. But, like, any number, like, even silly ones, like, for example, 248. Well, they're all even, plus they're all multiples of each other. 2 times 2 is 4, 2 times 4 is 8. You know, like, weird stuff. Like, I find, I know, I'm telling you, there's something wrong with me. Like, I can find a significance in almost every freaking number that you can come up with, whether it's mathematical, whether it's a literary reference, whether it's even like a translation to a phone, you know, 337 is DDP. You know, like, any, I can always find a significance of the number somehow. I'm just crazy that way, I guess.
You're just crazy.
Well, in many other ways as well, but yes, you are correct.
Anyway, today's date is January 2nd. We'll just toss that out there before we start talking about numbers. I'm Black Ratchet, and you can tell it's Stank Dogs here because we're talking about crazy-ass numbers.
Yeah, leave it to me to talk about such bizarre things.
Numbers, woo! Yeah, this is our show topic tonight. We're trying to talk about crazy numbers.
Well, we are, in a way. We have a lot of different things going on tonight. A shotgun show, right?
Yes, we have a number of things to talk about. Uh-huh.
We have a couple of major ones, I think, that are going to drive the whole show, I believe.
Yeah, we're doing the shotgun topics, and I think 178 I called holiday freestyling. So this is holiday freestyling too, because
freestyling in the new year.
And 2007 freestyling.
Electric Boogaloo.
Yeah, 2007 is just. 2006 was a much more round number.
Yeah, true, but, you know, 7, you know, is a T in elite speak. So if you really, see, this again, this is my weird thing. You know, you got 2007, which really, 2007 is R-O-O-T. So this is the year of the root. I'm sorry, I can't help it. It's a weird thing. I'm sorry, I just do that. Welcome to root.
I never even thought of 2 being as a replacement for R.
You're not as fluent in lead speak as I am.
Well, no, I just actually try to make my lead speak understandable by people.
Oh, I know too. But you know what? The audience of this show probably would understand it. That's the funny part of the whole thing.
Because you're all losers. I mean, no.
Winners. Winners, yeah.
Winners, they rock. Listeners to this show are awesome.
Oh, man. Well, I got some housekeeping to do before we dive into any email.
Do you have housekeeping?
So. Oh, gee, just a little bit.
Well, I mean, I'm talking about like stuff on the show here. I'm not talking about like you're going to make your bed.
Well, maybe I can make my bed while I deliver the housekeeping for the show. Did you have housekeeping you wanted to do first before I go into mine? Or
no, I'm all set, so you can go take it away.
Well, I guess maybe I shouldn't do it again this week because I guess I overcommitted last time I was on the show, saying that we thought we had the server issues hammered down. Well, I guess we didn't. So I've been working on these things nonstop. Obviously, the holidays kind of threw a monkey wrench into things as well, and me traveling for work, and then I have to travel for the holidays. So finally got to sit down and really, really work on it and concentrate. And I've been working really closely with Tabiz lately. I work with Savant a lot. Before that, even had Notherion again last night, looking at some things. And we seem to have gotten the box stable again, as stable as I think we can get it at this stage. Basically, I don't know how much detail to go into here, actually. We're not getting errors anymore. We were getting a lot of errors about unable to create new thread, error number 11, stuff like that, generated by the forums, but it wasn't related to the forums, and that's what people didn't quite seem to understand. It's not the forums that were causing any problems. It's the server itself kind of choking. I guess the simplest way to explain it, because I can't explain it exactly, we do not know exactly what the problem is yet, but I guess the long and short of it is that we are just putting maximum capacity on the box as the bottom line, I think, and MySQL is just sucking the memory faster than we can get it. So we finally had to spend a lot of
time. Damn it, everyone, stop visiting the website.
Exactly. I mean, it's great that we're growing and all, but we just have to deal with the growing pains that go along with it, so... I optimized MySQL. Tabiz and I have been doing that all week, basically going through trying different optimizations. This end of this week, like starting, let's see, last week, actually Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, every night. And, yeah, Sunday night, every night I was up till 4 or 5 a.m. reading MySQL documentation. And long-time listeners know how much I just despise MySQL in general. From a programming standpoint.
And by MySQL documentation, we mean...
Exactly. That might have made it more interesting. It's dry, just reading through every variable and whatnot. See, I always hated MySQL from a programming standpoint. It didn't support stored procedures in the past. Don't write me emails telling me it does now. Big fucking whoop, great. It's still got issues from a programming standpoint. But now, I hate it even more because from a sysadmin standpoint, all this configuration and tweaking and stuff is just ridiculous. It does not scale well. And as our site's growing, it's just causing just a horrible load on the server. It's eating up memory. And I'm going in and I'm looking at every system variable that MySQL has. I'm reading their documentation. I'm doing exactly what it suggests you do. I'm tuning it to exactly what our needs are in the box and what our specs on the box are. And I must have bounced MySQL 200-300 times here in the past couple weeks, and Apache and stuff like that, and none of it seems to really do much or help very much. Got it to the point where it looks like it's stable. I haven't had any reports of errors since these last round of changes, so we're hopefully just going to leave it like that. We still get some Apache processes that hang, which I believe is because it's needing memory, it's not able to get it, and it gets confused, and it just kind of hangs there and eats up CPU cycles. So that's the only ongoing problem that I'm aware of now. And the solution is we manually watch the box and restart Apache whenever that happens. But
what we need to do is we need to like train like a little monkey to do it for us.
Well, yeah, or replace the monkey with a little Perl script, but that's not a long-term solution either. We can't just restart Apache randomly or whatever. We need to find the cause of the problem, which is frustrating because as far as the system's concerned, it's just a running process. It doesn't know or care that it's eating up the CPU. As far as it's concerned, it's running, so that means there's nothing generated in the error logs. You know, there's nothing for us to look at and see, hey, what's going wrong? So we're trying to figure out, okay, well, who's process, what is this specific process running. Maybe it's hitting some weird URL that's got a bug in it, or I mean, it's just so hard to figure out. But that's where we're at now, and hopefully we'll get that shored up. But even so, this is a short-term solution. We still are pushing the box to maximum capacity. So in the next month or two, we are probably going to be switching to a new hosting company because we need to upgrade the box. And our current hosting company has been okay when we do all the work ourselves, but as soon as I start asking questions or try to get them involved, they want to nickel and dime me for every little thing to look at or every little thing that you want done, which is common for every hosting company, so I can't really single them out and say it's their fault. It's just time for us to kind of grow and evolve, so that'll probably be happening. So we'll, of course, keep people in the loop and let everybody know, because there will probably be a downtime. We'll minimize it as much as possible. When we switch servers, we're probably going to have to take a day or two off, maybe over a weekend. We'll have to take the site down and as we move everything over, but we'll, of course, let everybody know before that happens. So that's my housekeeping for the week. And
what we should do is we can have like www1binrev and www2binrev. We'll be elite and like all enterprise.
No. See, and here's the other thing, and gosh, I hesitate to say this on the air because I know I'm going to get such backlash for it, but you guys got to realize I've been paying for this out of pocket for years. You know, dedicated server with a lot of bandwidth for the radio show and the videos and all the other stuff. And now we've maxed the capacity. Well, the next step up is a pretty big financial step up for me, and I don't know if I can keep paying this kind of money for this kind of server. I mean, as much as I love it, and, you know, I love you guys and everything, but, you know, I got to put food in the dog's mouth, too, so we got to, might have to work something out here. I've always said that I don't ever, ever, ever want to have to put ads on the site, but I got to tell you, we got to honestly consider it, because the future of BinRev is kind of at stake now. We just can't afford to pay for all the resources that we need anymore, so we might have to break down and work something out or work out some subscription plans or some donations. We're tossing around a lot of ideas, but we're probably going to have to do something in the future. But once again, we'll let everybody know and solicit some advice or suggestions as we go along. But I don't know, at some point it's just...
I think we should auction off dinner with...
Yeah, well, okay, that might get us a nickel.
I was thinking a couple of cents at least, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I guess technically Savant would pay up to a dollar to go have dinner with me, but I'd have to guarantee him sex afterwards, and, you know...
Yeah, I'm going to say only if you put out afterwards, so...
Oh, who are we kidding? We know I'm going to put out. All right, so that's it for me as far as I think that's all. That's enough, trust me. It's frustrating, too, that I have to spend all my time doing sysadmin stuff. I'm not able to participate in projects as much as I'd like. I haven't been able to write as much. I've got a few ideas I've come up with and some scripts I want to write, and I just haven't had time because every waking moment's spent researching and tweaking the server.
So, okay, essentially what you just summarized, we're doomed.
Pretty much that's the way it feels. No, we'll work it out somehow, but bear with us as we go through some growing pains, that's all.
All right, well, sounds fair enough.
Sounds good to me.
Shall we go into email? And our first email is from Matt. And it says, "Greeting Black Ratchet and Faceman. Nice A-team reference, by the way. Faceman's Linux troubles. Try Ubuntu. I like it. Faceman's statement that BinRev does not condone getting hurt with Uzis or something like that." And he has mattkaren.net/interest/shooting/zombies.php.
And boy, what a bizarre! I have not listened to these episodes yet because of my traveling. I can't wait to go back and listen to them. Now triggering
one thing
email
you might
about bringing a maxi patch. You know, the human female is the only animal
here.
And species that can bleed for 30 days and never bleed for a week every 30 days and live.
Think about it; they are meant to absorb blood and they are sterile.
I don't know. I heard that somewhere. I don't know if it's true or not. There you go. It's on the internet. It's got to be true.
Well,
pure
how do we know that animals don't do that? I really don't. Oh, my line was, I don't trust anything that bleeds for 7 days and doesn't die. He also says, Purell or other hand sanitizers aren't just for cleaning your hands. They're jellied alcohol, which makes them a great accelerant. I don't know that I would use it if timber was dry and easy to start, but it might be the only way to get a fire going if it's raining. As the alcohol burns off, you can use it to dry out and start your bird's nest and get something going. Motherboard beeps. It covers everything in the episode here. Why is it that the first 64K of memory isn't on the motherboard? Hell, you could put 128K on the first 64. You put 128K on, and if the first 64 fails, they flip to the second. We just need enough to init the VGA card and print a useful message to the console. Way easier than beeps. Vintage computer stuff. Remember the whole memory mess of the 1990s? You've got conventional memory, which you had to keep as free as possible by pushing stuff onto the upper memory area by running himem.sys and emm386, or the QEMM replacement, which worked a lot better. Now, once you get above the 1 megabyte memory limit, which for many people, including myself, refer to as the 640K limit, there are two solutions. In the mid to late 80s, there was expanded memories, which, like Intel's physical address extensions of more recent memory, allowed the system to access more memory than was originally designed. The nifty thing about this is that it was an ISA plug-in card, which behaved like a bus peripheral. Okay, peripheral, yeah. I didn't know why I said that.
Because this email is so freaking long, it's like reading a book.
Yeah, it just jumps around. It's a good email, though.
Yeah.
Okay, technically this isn't completely true. The PAE is a CPU-level trickery to compensate for limits of the 32-bit CPUs able to address memory. The 286 systems were able to access this memory, but the OS wasn't. So this was more to fake out DOS than anything else. It used a special driver to allow the OS to read and write data to the board. Of course, the software had to be written for it, and anything wishing to go to take advantage of it had to be specifically written to do so. This caused issues later on, as software written for EMS memory couldn't run on later systems unless the memory emulator was properly configured, or configured correctly.
Why'd you feel the need to improvise his email there? What was wrong with it saying was configured correctly? You had to change it to properly configured.
Because I felt that was better.
And I just like calling you out when you do it.
Yeah, shut up. Once we grew out of this hack and extended, and the memory started resembling what we typically think of today, you get extended memory, various memory managers, including the aforementioned QEMM and QEMM386, allowed you to specify amounts of different types of memory available to the applications, and there used to be specifications options for these when specifying startup settings for DOS applications and older version of Windows, though I don't think there's any way to do this. I don't know if there's a way to do this now. Of course, this all went away with protected mode memory access, which is a much memory idea. Re-eye candy. Have you checked out Barrel? It's an OpenGL accelerated Windows manager, which has plenty of eye candy. I got it working, and the eye candy is rather nice, but I'm not going to be using it because I prefer my XFCE setup better. Until I can duplicate the way I have XFCE set up, I'm still using FXCE. Still, it's pretty, and you folks might like it. Take it easy, Matt.
Man, what did you do with all that money you'd been saving up?
All that money?
Yeah, for speech therapy.
Been saving up?
Owned!
I knew there was something coming there that I didn't want to have, but I walked into it.
Well, that was a long email. I think I would have stumbled all through that one, too. That was, like, a bunch of different topics in that thing. Mm-hmm. And I think the summary is, be glad we're not still using DOS. Because I remember having to carry around a floppy disk with all the configurations on it because, I go play games on computers in the university or something like that. And I'd have to pop in my boot disk so that it would partition all the memory out the way that the game needed it because it could only use so much. And, yeah, it wasn't fun.
hey, pop quiz. What is
QEMM? Hold on. Extended Memory Manager. It's QUAB. Oh, man. What does the Q stand for? Quarter deck. Yes, I forgot.
the software company for those.
Yeah, but didn't they actually later get incorporated into?
Shit was hardcore.
Wasn't that actually used in Windows 95? Didn't they actually buy it up and incorporate it in to use like their version of run legacy support, like the way you could run old DOS programs in a DOS shell window, because it was still at that time based underlying DOS was still around, DOS 7, I think it was, and you still needed it if you wanted to play your old games.
Could be.
Frankly, you may still need it now for all I know.
I haven't actually
gone back to try to play Commander Keen under under XP or anything.
Okay, yeah. They do have all that emulation stuff, so you never know. All I remember is, like, if from Microsoft Flight Simulator, which I played back in the day, and still it's a fun game, it was like, I was running it on a horribly outdated machine, and it said, if you were running, like, certain maps, you needed lots of expanded memory, but if you were doing certain other things, you needed lots of extended memory, too, and, like, I was just looking at it going, dude, I have 1 meg of RAM. Go screw yourself.
I never got into that.
I should get that program.
If I was going to learn how to do a flight simulator, I'd learn how to fly a real plane
flight sims
instead. Which I did, but got kicked out of. That's a story for another time, though. You don't want to go there.
Let's see. Our next email is from Anonymous. Ooh. There is one thing you can do to avoid detection from UAVs with IR. If you have any survival blankets, you can use those to cover up your heat signature. Survival blankets are the ones mentioned that have the one shiny side. Make sure that that side is
facing outward. Facing outward, what, it cooks you like a baked potato? Or?
Well, no, you want your body heat reflected in, because that's what the camera is looking for.
Tell you what, you want me to read one? So you can go get some sweet iced tea or whatever it is you drink. Next email comes from Neoino. Interesting sounding name, Neoino. He says, "Hey, Ben Rev Radio Host 1 and Ben Rev Radio Host 2.
It was fun
That's
to say.
Us. Listening to show 178 at the moment, and earlier you spoke about culture jamming, and my mind was cast back to a podcast idea I had, which I dubbed life cracking. Life hacking is already a buzzword, sadly. The idea to have a social hacking challenge to fulfill every X weeks, and then the challengees report back to the podcast with their experiences. Could also be modified so the challenge is aired 1 week and then listeners take on that challenge and email their responses back in. Actually, I think this is kind of an interesting idea. Might make for a pretty funny segment, and of course the advantages of having a multinational group of coordinated social hackers can't be discounted." Actually, it would be kind of a neat thing to have on Freak Factor if it, you know, ever comes back. I talked to him out there yesterday, and he's a busy man. Anyway. Yeah, well, you know, you do what you got to do, I guess. Oh, and look, this next email is something that I don't want to talk about, so I'm going to turn this one back over to you. Yeah, I hate my SQL. It sunk donkey.
Oh, sure. Run away like a little coward you are. All right, let's see. Oh, actually, this is from Anonymous as well. In episode 176, Black Ratchet read an email from a listener that wanted to store a GUID in a MySQL database. The listener was having trouble because the maximum numeric type that MySQL will store is an 8-byte integer, but a GUID is 16 bytes, 128 bits. Black Ratchet said that the reason this is not very well supported is because it's unlikely that anyone ever bothered trying to index a table by a GUID, since no one uses GUIDs other than Microsoft for the registry. And MySQL is largely a Unix-based system. However, there is at least one big system that heavily uses Linux/open-source software and uses a GUID scheme for identifying data, and that's Second Life. I'm not going to go much into Second Life at http://secondlife.com, all spelt out with the words. except to say that it's a large multi-user virtual world in which users create all kinds of 3D objects. GUIDs are used to identify pretty much everything in the world, from objects to users to scripts and sounds. Linden Lab, the maker of Second Life, has reportedly touted the fact they use MySQL databases for a fair amount of their data, and I'm sure at least some of the data, some of their tables index on GUIDs. I realize with a lead-in like this, I'm supposed to tell you the right way of indexing a table by a GUID, but I'm not that much of a database person. I do store some GUIDs in a semi-big 300,000K record, or 300,000 record, MySQL table of my own, and I just made the GUID column to be of type char, whatever you want to call it, 36, so 36 characters. And store the GUID as is in a hexadecimal with dashes. I'm pretty sure there's probably a better way, but I'm not a DB pro. That said, doing this makes for pretty speedy lookups, so I'm happy. Anyway, I just wanted to let you know that GUIDs aren't just for Microsoft Registry anymore. I'm sure other services out there use them as well. Oh, I never said that Microsoft is the only person that uses, or only entity that uses GUIDs. I'm just saying that Microsoft-based systems are, they rely heavily on them.
Well, now, and fill me in here for a GUID. Is this what, just a unique row identifier and SQL Server? Is that what that
is? It is a global,
Is it equivalent to, like, a row ID in Oracle, or?
Essentially, you can use it for that, but it's more along the lines of, it's called a global unique identifier, and I'm sure you've seen it. It's that little, like, bunch of hex characters. You see it in the registry a lot.
Random,
yeah.
Right, kind of gibberish looking, but they're all unique. They're unique numbers, sorry. But they're unique. All that is to uniquely identify a row in a table.
No, not necessarily. It also can be used to, used to uniquely identify anything. Like, for example, in the registry, each program has a GUID. And when you create a GUID, it takes a, like, the machine it was created on. It takes, a, like, its Ethernet address, and it takes the time it was actually created, and probably, like, the phase of the moon, and all kinds of other stuff.
Yeah, I didn't realize that was also called a GUID. Or I guess I didn't think about it. I never really cared.
No, I really don't care either.
And I would love to know how in the holy hell Second Life is able to use MySQL on such a large scale. I mean, they've got to have it, like, they must spend a lot of money on all these multiple servers powering the database, scattering load across a data center, because, for crying out loud, we can't even handle running one busy forums on it. So, I'm sure they're, I wonder how much longer that'll last.
Well, I'm sure they have loads and loads and loads and loads of servers scattered about various data centers across the United States.
Yeah. Well, more power to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's about sort of wraps it up for email.
Is that it?
Yeah, I think so.
All righty, then. We don't have closing email music, do we?
No, we don't.
Bonna, that was the email. Bonna, radio@binrev.com. There we go. Now we have.
There we go. There's our closing email. We're just gonna. I'm gonna isolate that, and I'm gonna use that every.
No, that was just for this week. That was a special just for this week.
No, man. The show's. I was gonna say the show is under release under Creative Commons, but I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, absolutely, we are. Actually.
Oh, we are. Okay. I didn't know if we were.
I have something I wanted to. Let me check something real quick here on the global interweb while I talk and stall for time. The last episode of BinRev Radio that I did with Knot Theory, which is what I'm trying to look up to give you guys the exact number online. Notice how I stall while I do it, which was 169, the episode on virtualization, one that Knot Theory and I hosted. That was about the time that people were doing some remixes of my voice on the show, which is why it popped into my head. And using my I'm a Fucking Moron remixes that they're making, well, Knot Theory and I had a few outtakes from that episode and some funny stuff, that I slipped onto the end of that file. And I know a lot of people will listen to the closing music or start listening and then turn it off when they think it's ended, but sometimes I'll hide in a few little Easter eggs at the end of the show sometimes. So you might want to listen all the way through those episodes, because might be some other good remix material on there sometime. Just thought I'd share that.
Well, are the Easter eggs now that
you
announced them?
Well, I gave it how long and nobody found them. I mean, people, see, and this is something like, here's the thing. Like, I also do that thing in the forums where I talk about post titles, for example. You know, and I think somebody even posted this in the forums. They got what I was saying. It's noticing all the little details. You got to pay attention to every little thing that's going on. We never, I mean, we have a regular pattern to the show, but we slip in some surprises once in a while. We slip in a few new things. We try different stuff. We like to try to keep everybody on their toes. So always pay attention to the detail. And if you see anything unusual, it might just be a screw-up or a mistake, but it might be a little Easter egg that we planted somewhere. There are still stuff on the site that have been there for 3, 4, 5 years that people have never found.
Well, just so you know, it's
probably
true. That's true. On the radio show.
I was going to say, especially if I'm hosting, then. Ow. That hurt.
No.
I'll try not to, but I guess when you roll across the room and you've got big toes like me, you're just going to run over yourself. That's going to leave a mark.
I don't want a picture.
That's right. Okay, I certainly have no idea what you're talking about. Anyway.
Oh, big sock.
We're going to do, you want to move into some topics, or while you're driving the show, I'll sit back and shut up.
Oh, I don't know, do we want to talk about personal habits first, because I have nothing.
I got one quick one, because this is kind of my first post-holiday episode. I got a new gadget. I know last time I was on with you, we talked about some of the other gadgets that I take with me when I travel. I got a new gadget that I had been wanting for Christmas. I got the Harman, what's this damn thing called? Harman Universal Advanced Universal Remote Control, the 880. Because I have quite a few gadgets and devices in there, DVD player, VCR, et cetera, big TV, all that good stuff. And I wanted them one universal remote control to rule them all. Dun, dun, dun. Well, I was kind of excited about this. I was really looking forward to it. I got it for Christmas, and I was able to finally get a few minutes to sit down and try to program it. A couple cool things about it. I guess this is turning into a mini review. A couple cool things that you can customize the wallpaper. You can customize the colors and look and feel of the screen. You can customize the background wallpaper, and you can upload pictures as a slideshow. It has a screen on it, but it is not touch screen. No, you touch the buttons next to the appropriate visual button on the screen. You can't actually touch the screen, but it does have a little screen there that's customizable. So I guess you'd have to go to Logitech and look to see what I'm talking about. But so that part of it was cool. Well, the part of it that I'm kind of disappointed in, well, there's a couple of parts. Because I really, really wanted this, and I really was hoping, because it works. First of all, they've got a huge database, a huge library of support for lots of different devices. I mean, I've had an old VCR that I've just always liked, and they had it on there. They had my Apex 660, my hacked Apex region free player. They have just all kinds of stuff that I never even heard of. They have a huge database of controls for different devices. So that's cool. So you go in there, and basically they have a little app that it's pretty much one of those wizard-style things where they walk you through, tell me your device and your model number. It looks it up in the database and downloads everything to your remote control via USB. This is also rechargeable, in case I didn't say. It's got a little docking station to recharge your batteries, which lasts about a week. Yep. And the other really cool thing is it's got a little, I think it's like the Nintendo Wii.
Cool.
It's got one of those little motion sensors in it where, like, you can have it sitting there, and if you reach and pick it up, it notices that it's movement. It senses the movement with a little sensor inside and lights up so you can see it in the dark, which is kind of cool. The performance is where it fell short for me. It does what it's supposed to do.
Okay.
It's just a little bit clunky about the way it does it. It's just not as responsive as I would like. Basically, when it walks through the wizard, it will... I don't know how to say it, project-driven instead of device-driven. It's action-driven. So you put in an action like watch a DVD. And what it will do is it'll say, okay, well, to watch a DVD, you want to, A, send the turn-off signal to the television, or the turn-on signal to the television, turn-on signal to the DVD, change to this channel, whatever channel you need to watch your DVD, or this input to watch your DVD, Same thing with a VCR. They're buttons based on action where it will do a series of events based on what you want to do, which kind of sounds fine, you know. If I want to watch a DVD, it's great. I can push one button and it does all those things for me.
Uh-huh.
Well, first of all, everything has to be off to begin with, which is kind of annoying. So if I've already got it on and I decide, oh, I want to watch a DVD, I can't push the button because it doesn't know what the hell's going on. So I have to power everything off just to begin with or to do with something different, which kind of sucks. Now, I believe that I can go in and customize and reprogram the scripts that are running behind it, and I can tell it, turn off the TV, then turn the TV back on. I can put a turn off in front of it, but that's like, I shouldn't have to hack it that much to do something that I think is fundamental or commonly needed. And it's like that for other things. And the other thing I didn't like about it is there's no button for like the straightforward, obvious thing. There's no button that says, turn on and watch television. I have to go hit the button on the remote to switch to devices, and then under devices, select TV, and then hit the button that says on. Well, if I got to go through that fucking work, I'll just use the TV remote in the first damn place. So it makes you have to go through too many steps. Again, I can probably write my own little script and assign it to a button that says turn on television, and it'll send the turn on TV signal and maybe change to the input in the channel or something. But I just don't feel like, and I probably will do that, I just don't feel like I should have done that. It seems to me like that's something that every consumer is going to want or need, and they should have really put support for something that simplistic already into it. But what do I know? Yeah, I know. People are starting to notice that, huh? It's been four plus, wait a minute, we're 4 years?
Not much, actually.
Season four still, right? Yeah, we're three. I don't know. Let's just say it's been 4 years and people are finally starting to see through my facade of false knowledge.
Yeah, I think so.
That's right. But yeah, I guess that's my show and tell. I got that gadget. It was I think it retails for $250 and you can get it on the street for $200. But I'm pretty sure I'm leaning towards returning it because it's too awkward and clunky to use. So there you go. I am. I really, really wanted this because not only that. Well, here's one other good thing that it would do for someone like me too. I have some really old, some other hack DVD players, some old televisions and stuff that I've long lost the remote controls for from all of my moving around. So the universal ones you buy in, you know, Target or whatever for $5-$10 or Best Buy or any of those places. Mm-hmm. They never work right, or they'll only have the minimal buttons. You can turn it on and change channels, and that's really it. None of the other stuff actually works properly. So it's cool that I can go in there and program in, I think up to 8 devices it'll allow you to program it in. So I can put in the 3, 4, 5 that are in my main living room, including your Xbox, Wii, PlayStation, whatever the hell you got in there, and the functions and that. You can turn those on and play DVDs through them if you have the infrared thing on those and stuff like that, but I would also be able to say, oh, well, I can take the remote control with me back and watch the TV in the bedroom and into the second bedroom over here and turn that TV on and play a DVD and stuff like that. You can program all those in there as well. So that is definitely a cool feature. You finally get a true universal remote control that you can even walk from one room to the other with. Bow-chicka-bow-wow. And, yeah. Well, in the next one up from this, which I wanted, but I wasn't willing to pay the extra, I think it was $150 more, I think it was a $400, is the 890, which has RF frequency in it. So I can actually turn it off around corners and stuff like that, which is kind of cool. Good way to mess with people. I didn't get that one, so I can't tell you, but I believe that they put an RF in the base station. Of the thing,
yeah,
and you plug that into
that
the TV, and it's sending the signal to the base station, which converts it into the appropriate signals to send to your TV. But I don't know. I'd have to. I didn't get that model. Yeah, I know. Wouldn't that be cool? plus the other thing is what, and I don't know if it supports this. And again, this would be a huge oversight in my opinion. If I designed it, I would also have it. If it's going to do RF, I would have it have a support for all of the X10 devices. So not only can I control my electronics, my TV and stuff, but I can control my X10 devices, which would be lights, the garage door fucking opener, my electric ceiling fan. A lot of those are RF-based. I want to control every... I don't ever want to have to get up. I want to sit in the chair and never, ever have to get up. Bedpan, whatever it takes.
Or even better, get one of
would
those
I have
little,
to actually get in the electric
control,
wheelchair, or would I
control,
just send... Well, maybe I can program a Roomba
and just use
and
that.
Send it from room to room
with
built in. I'll hack a Roomba robot together and have it... Oh, man, this is turning into a pretty cool project. Oh, well. Anyway, that's my show and tell. You got nothing? Come on, you had to get something. You had to get something cool for Christmas. Or Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, whatever. Festivus. Festivus for the rest of us.
No, I don't have anything. Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa? Festivus. Yeah, I was actually seeing a couple of Festivus-type cards out there and such. And it's kind of sad because I realized that that was actually thought up by a sitcom. But I mean, it's Festivus is fun, but it's just weird that it's a TV show. A TV show thought of it, and people are like starting to celebrate it.
It's not just a TV show. It was Seinfeld.
Whatever. It's like MASH thought of a holiday. How about that?
Oh, MASH, come on. MASH didn't even hold a candle to Seinfeld. Are you kidding me? MASH can't even hang with Roseanne, for crying out loud.
Dude, MASH was, like, pretty pumped up. It's like, I still think it's the highest-rated single moment of TV, isn't it?
Well, people weren't as smart back then, though. See? Boy, is that going to have a landslide of email coming in.
Dude, my friend...
Come on, I'd watch Hogan Heroes over MASH reruns. MASH never did anything for me.
Oh, I love MASH.
I'm not saying it's bad. It's not bad. It's just, it's kind of like Frasier. Frasier's, I know it's good. It got great ratings from some. It just didn't do anything for me.
Oh, because it was It attempted to appeal to people's sophisticated humor, and that doesn't work well.
I don't have any.
Exactly.
No, just give me dick and fart jokes, and I'm good. Although there's a new show with Tina Fey in it. That's got some pretty smart humor. I like that one. 30 Rock.
I don't know. Yeah, it's got Baldwin and Tina Fey. And,
you know. Yeah, I don't particularly care for some of the others, but Tina Fey is hilarious. Anyway, we're getting sidetracked. We need to do a television, like, not an episode of BenRev. We need to start a new show about television. You know, I should get Alonka to do a show with me about television each week. That would be fun. Yeah, like
what happened on TV this week?
Yeah, it'd all be about reality shows because that's what we both are into, but anyway...
Did you see Survivor this week? Oh, my God.
This week? Oh, are you kidding? That show was over 2-3 weeks ago.
Yes, I know.
You watched it, too, didn't you?
No, I didn't, thank God. That's one of those things that can scare me out of the room faster than a nuclear disaster.
What? Scare you out of the room? Why?
I can't stand that show. It's stupid.
Oh, I thought you meant there was something on it that you didn't... Never mind. I don't like watching Fear Factor, because, like... I think I've been in that rant before. Fear Factor, there's nothing fear. Like, some of the stunts I can see, but, you know, daring somebody to eat a pig's asshole, that's not Fear Factor. That's Gross Factor. I'm not going to fucking eat some, you know, cow's unwashed asshole. That's not fear. That's Stupidity Factor, you know? I don't want to eat, like, a fucking goat's nuts or anything like that. What does that prove that you're brave? That proves to me you're a fucking idiot and you'll do anything for money. Aren't you glad we went down this road on the show? Don't you think we should get on something tech?
I always think, like, the host of Survivor has, like, the easiest job in the world, because, like, when he's announcing contests, he just states the obvious. I listen to him all, like, I could do that.
So-and-so is way ahead. He's got the first lock open. Well, gee, thanks, Brainiac 5.
And if I get to wear the spiffy hat,
yeah, well, I don't know if you could pull off the hat. Oh, you know what? I would watch if you were the host and you had to be there in your full Eagle Scout uniform with the badges and everything. I'd fucking watch that. Just to see you in that uniform with the hat.
Well, no, because if you're in the Boy Scout uniform, you have to wear the
Boy
Scout hat.
Is that against the rules to wear a different hat?
Big old... Well, it would not be part of your class uniform.
Whatever.
Well, no, but I can wear
didn't
the
guy in the previous
hat.
Episode say something about he didn't want to hear any more survival stuff? I guess I better shut up now, huh?
We're not talking about survival stuff. Well, I guess technically not. You're talking about survival stuff. I'm talking
about Boy Scouts learn survival tips and techniques.
Well, yeah, that's how I learned it. Anyway, let's go into here. What's on the topic?
Well, I
for
think
tonight?
That we're doing a shotgun style show, which again, I guess a little bit of an explanation here is I read entirely far too much. I subscribe to 50-plus magazines, and I pretty much read them nonstop. I can't sit and watch TV. I joke about watching, you know, I watch a lot of TV these days with TiVo, thankfully, but I can't just watch it. Yeah, I can't just watch, especially Survivor, honestly.
Survivor.
I mean, I like it, but I can't just sit and watch it. I read while I watch television. I always multitask and read something while I'm watching television because television is not exactly stimulating my mind very often, so I usually try to read while I'm watching TV and get a lot of stuff. And what I do is, and yes, I'm a complete geek, and Black Ratchet and I were just discussing that before the show, as I go through these magazines, I pull out the articles that I find are interesting or worth reading on the air or sharing or discussing online or something like that, and I end up with a whole bunch of torn-out pages laying around the house in the back here in the war room, back here in what is that called in war games? What do they call it? Yeah, something like that, whatever.
Central Control
Center. NORAD,
Central,
there you go. That's, I'll call it NORAD. The Hat Cave.
NORAD,
I'll call
I
it the Hat Cave, but
room.
Now it's not a cave anymore. It's kind
of
nicer. But anyway, so I have a few articles I thought we'd go through and some stuff that we have online, some stuff that Ratchet has. So which one should we start with first? You want to do the – because actually one of my favorites here is an article from CSO Online, which is Chief Security Officer Magazine, csoonline.com. I think you can read all these online if you don't subscribe to the print magazine.
Well,
no?
Google
okay.
didn't index.
Yeah, well, they've got a website.
Google
maybe you have to be a subscriber
nothing,
to get
so,
to them. I'm not
know.
Sure. But what this is it's an article called – how many times do I use is in that sentence? It's an article called What Guilty Looks Like, A List of the Physical Visual Tells Used in Behavioral Profiling to Catch Potential Bad Guys. Now, what the fuck did I just say? They're basically saying what kind of facial tics and nuances and things do people do that trigger them or make you be suspicious of them, that they might be a criminal, might be a terrorist, that sort of thing. You know, somebody's acting – what defines acting suspicious, I guess, is a simpler way to
say it, right? Well, if I'm a terrorist, I'm not sure if facial tics are going to give you away, but maybe my shirt that ticks.
Well, that might do it, too. well, I tell you what, here, there's a list of things here. Let's see if a ticking device on your body is on the list of things. There is some of the things TSA employees might look for, TSA, of course, being the security in the airports. And actually, let's go by these one by one and see if we agree with or see what we think about these. Actually, if you use all these techniques intentionally and go into the airport, see if you get frisked and cavity searched and all that, if you're into that sort of thing. Number one, and make sure it's by somebody in a TSA uniform. Don't just bend over for anybody for a cavity search, unless
you like that sort of thing.
Exactly. Who are we to judge? Number one is rapidly darting eyes. That seems pretty straightforward, right? If somebody's eyes are darting around. I don't know, that's like something in the cartoons where the dog's eyes go back and forth real quick or the evil monkey in Family Guy or something. I don't know how many people really have shaky eyes, you know what I mean? But I guess...
Homicidal maniacs.
I guess somebody who's suspicious that's like always looking over their shoulder, maybe that's kind of along the same thing, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, number two... this one's a good one. Deliberate and forceful attempts to make eye contact or trade hand gestures with a specific person, perhaps a co-conspirator. And again, I think that's something you see in sitcoms, you know, like somebody's behind the other person trying to get your attention, you know, don't say that, he's looking. And then when they turn and get caught, they try to play it off.
Well, I guess I'm screwed if I want to, like, talk to my wife who's behind, who's out of earshot or something. Like,
or what if, you know, if you had to sign somebody who's deaf, come over.
Yeah, exactly. If you're deaf, you're hosed.
Did he just say plant a bomb? Swarm! Another Seinfeld reference. Let's see, number three, quivering or overactive Adam's apple in men. I've never thought of that one before. Oh, quivering, yes, I guess. I don't. Quivering sounds like a very feminine word, but... Overactive Adam's apple? Do men... I don't think I ever knew that one before. Well, do men's Adam apples tend to move or fluctuate or something when they're nervous or when they're... You ever heard that?
I've never heard of that, personally.
Interesting. I'm going to have to watch for that. Get that Adam's apple moving.
We have to find some nervous men.
Oh, man. Must resist joke. Tom Carlson, not here. Oh. Okay. Let's see. Number four, profuse sweating. Well, I don't know. Yeah, I guess that's an obvious sign of nervousness, but what if it's hot? Plus, you know, I'm kind of a big guy. I tend to sweat more than, like, Natas or somebody.
There was no AC in my small airport.
Yeah, I guess obviously this is all in context. I mean, if somebody's sweating in North Dakota in the airport versus in, you know, down in Miami in the airport, then that's a little bit different. Okay, yeah. I don't know what number this is. Pulsing carotid artery, a tell used by a Utah State trooper who identified a wanted polygamist by his throbbing neck vein. A little extra information on that one. What was that about?
I don't know. I'm not sure if I want to
Yeah, neck,
a guy
as in
neck
head
vein.
And neck. I think that's, yeah. But that's the, I don't want to look at any throbbing vein. Throbbing and vein together, not a fun picture, period. I don't think there's any throbbing vein that I would ever... If you ever said, hey, do you want to see the throbbing? I'm going to go, no, stop, no. Whatever it is, throbbing, I don't want to see it. Don't want to know about it, don't want to hear about it. Yeah, so. A pulsing carotid artery. See, that's... I think that would also be something that's really hard to see. Wouldn't you have to be right up in someone's face to see that?
Well, I guess if you're looking at someone across the desk O security that they have when you're putting
maybe
all your stuff down, you'd be able to
see
it. I mean, look at what you're probably doing from
the
Utah
right?
guy. I mean, he probably pulled him over and he's looking at it from...
Well, I don't know. It depends on what I'm doing, I guess. I try to avoid being pulled over if I can help it. But I mean, if you see someone's carotid artery pulsing from like across a fucking room, call a medic for God's sake. Call 911. I mean, something's wrong with that picture. the next one actually kind of goes back to what I just said on this tangent there. It's inappropriate clothing for the weather conditions. And this may go back to what you were saying about ticking. I mean, if you're in Miami and you're in an overcoat that's ticking, you know, that's kind of a telltale sign that there might be trouble.
That if you're
well,
you're
could be that
a lot
too.
Of
like the guy, okay, were you there? The guy in White Castle in New York and at Hope. No, not that. Yeah, no, not that guy. The guy went after the show,
that.
Not him. But when I think
Hope
it was,
stuff?
Who was it? I think it might have been Droops. No, it was ZeroDB and I. ZeroDB and I were in there for lunch in the afternoon. The guy came in trying to sell knockoff watches, and I guess he must have been a regular for that because as soon as they saw him come over to and. Start talking to people, they call the cops on him. It was kind of cool. New York's pretty late, I gotta say, for vacation anyway. Let's see. What else? Voice changes. Overly combative or stressful tones of voice, regardless of what one is saying. Regardless of what one is saying. Interesting. Yeah, I guess it makes sense. It makes sense, I guess.
That's weird. I don't know.
How they say things is more important than what they say, but what they say is pretty fucking important, too. I mean, if they walk up to you and calmly say, yes, I'm going to blow up your plane, please give me a ticket. They can be as calm as they want to be, but you know, that's why they tell you, too, like, lately I noticed, I know they said this all along, and maybe you've noticed this if you've been traveling, but lately in the announcements over the airports that I've been going through, which is quite a few of them, they've added a comment that says, "No," basically saying, do not joke or make humorous comments. Any humorous comments will be treated as serious threats. So please, for the sake of whatever, do not try to joke with the security agents or something like that. So keep that in mind. Really?
I've never actually heard that. I've always heard that. It hasn't been recently or anything, but, yeah.
Yeah, I had so never heard it on the
thing.
Announcements
it's not a
before
matter.
Until
well,
recently.
Like,
so maybe
you. Everything is a joking
yeah,
matter.
Maybe it's just the airports I happen to go in didn't have it. But I mean, we've always
no,
yeah,
I
always
say that
it.
I have.
Anybody
no,
anybody
no.
Anybody travels has always known that they don't play when it comes to that stuff ever since 9/11. All right, a couple more left here. This one is kind of interesting. Loitering without luggage. And I'm not sure that I'm completely with that one because there's a lot of people waiting to pick people up. Yeah.
No. I am that's bull. Well, I'm my friend, he's a notoriously light packer and he came in from Costa Rica with his girlfriend. He just, you know, went on a trip, stayed there for a week and went through customs and the custom person said, "Look, I see your bag." And he said, "Sure, here it is." "Well, where's the other bags?" "That's it." "No, it isn't." "Yes, it is. That's I know what I picked."
Right,
so,
right.
I mean, they basically harassed him for a bit,
right.
But that's all he was
well,
saying.
Well, and plus it depends kind of on
disgusting.
Where you are, too. I mean, if
you
you're back in the
you,
terminal
you
area, then it might be a little bit more suspicious than it would be out in the luggage pickup or something like that because, you know, people are out there waiting for family to get off and giving people rides. So there's going to be people parked out in the terminal. And I know back right after 9/11, I remember traveling down from Fort Lauderdale Airport at the time, and they were putting a crackdown. They were not letting people stop to pick people up. You know how you go out front, you throw your luggage in the trunk, and you take off, you know. Well, sometimes, you know, people would sit there for maybe 2, 3, 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't want you to stay more than a couple minutes, but after 9/11, they wouldn't let you stop, period, unless the person was there to throw their luggage in. They had to be there, and you got maybe 30 seconds to throw it in and then get the hell out. They would not let you stop and wait even for 15 seconds. If they saw you stop and people were not putting something in your car within seconds, they would come over and say, "You got to go."
Logan does that here in Boston. They actually are... I mean, it's not more of instantaneous, but if traffic starts to get snarled around it, they just send one of the troopers comes by and just says, "Go, go, go!" So that's a.
You know, I am on a little tangent here. I learned something new recently at what airport was I at that this happened? I think this might have been in Orlando International. Yeah, I think it was. The parking garage at airports, which is a huge fucking ripoff, by the way. But anyway, you get reimbursed. I get reimbursed, so I don't care. You leave, you go in, you take a ticket, and it's like a luxury parking in like large cities. Maybe you can back me up on this. I've never had to park in a large city. But you go get a ticket that time stamps your date and time that you arrived. And then when you leave the parking lot, it's a controlled environment. You can't get out without going through the checkout lanes or whatever. And they'll look at it, and based on how many days or hours or whatever that you spend in the garage, that's how they determine what to charge you. Well, I was driving out one night, and I was chatting up the girl that was working at the lane there, and I asked her, I said, "Hey, what if, you know, I had forgotten where my ticket was, it was in my visor," and I was like, "What if you lose this thing?" I said, "How do you know how long I've been there? Is it like a maximum charge or a minimum charge or whatever? If I lose my ticket, how do you know I've been there for a day, a week, or a month, or 6 months?" And I found out, and I don't know if you know this, but I did not, they have someone who walks through that thing every night and writes down every license plate of every car in the parking garage. Now, I don't know if this is just at Orlando Airport or all of them. I would suspect that it's at all of them, however.
Well,
they go through, they write down all of them, so they know the day that you got there, if not the hour. They'll know the day, so they'll know that this license plate number was not there on Monday, but it was here on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and if I come back Friday, they're like, "Okay, we know you've been there 4 days." And when you leave, there are cameras that have your license plate and all that kind of stuff, so a lot of it may be automated.
Mm-hmm.
But she told me that they have people that walk through their A to, you know, just for security purposes to make sure nothing's broken into or people aren't loitering or breaking into cars or whatever, and logging what spot you're in even and stuff like that. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
I haven't heard that, but actually, not for like an airport, but I did manage to lose my ticket once, and they basically took all my information. And I said, "Oh no!" I was honest with them. I said, "You know, I've been here for about 3 hours, but I don't have my ticket." And they said, "Oh, okay." And they just said, "You know, what my car was and who I was, and you know, I guess so I couldn't like really if they see the same car there like 15 billion times, and
right,
they're going to say, I think he could be pulling our leg.
Right, exactly.
This is an hourly lot.
Oh, okay. Well, let's see. We're towards the bottom of the list here. I did loitering without luggage. Okay, here, next to the last one is long periods studying parts of the airport, especially security areas. Now, see, that one's going to nail somebody like me, because I, all the time, I'm studying everything everywhere, not just in airports.
Yeah,
I'm the one that I like to, first of all, I like to shoulder surf anyway. So, yeah, if I see that security door at the airport with the little combination you punch in to get in, yeah, I'm always watching over there to see if I can find out what it is. I don't know that I'd ever be dumb enough to go try it and use it after I got it, but I just like to see if I can, see how careless people are. But anytime there's a computer, I always stop and look at the screen, glance at the computer. I'm not stupid enough. Sometimes in airports I'm extra careful, but if I'm ever in like a department store or anything and I see one, yeah, I might reach up and tap the space bar to turn off the screensaver to see what's under it. Or to see if it's locked. I might not do anything more than that, but I'll check. But not in an airport. Don't fuck around in the airport, people. Let me tell you.
No, unless you want to go to the federal pounding in the
airport. Yeah, they don't play. They don't joke with that. So and also when the people are like if I go in, I'm trying to get on standby for an earlier flight or anything like that. Anytime the employees back there, anytime they're sitting there typing in, I want to see what system they use. What's it powered by? Is it an AS400? Is it a Windows box, for crying out loud? What are they working on? Is it some kind of mainframe? So, yeah, I'm always looking over. I just want to see what they're doing and how it works, just because I'm interested in that sort of thing. So I'm probably they'd probably look at me funny because I'm always doing that. I want to know where every door goes. I like to know, you know, oh, that must lead out to the planes, and oh, that must be where they go down to load this up, and oh, look, that's where the pilots must go in there for break room or whatever. You know, I like to know what's going on just because I'm weird like that, I guess.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's not just weird. I mean, I do the same exact thing. It's just more figuring out everything about it and finding out, because a lot of people just don't pay attention to that stuff.
And you might find some, you know, like a lot of the airlines offer a hospitality suite type places, you know. You have to be a gold, platinum, Gigantor, frequent flyer, master plan member, kind of, to get into those things. But most of the time, they don't have anybody really checking. So, like, if you just find out where they are from watching where the other high flyers go, you might find a lot of places to hang out instead of sitting out there in those uncomfortable chairs with never, ever enough power outlets to plug in your freaking laptop. Yeah, if they have them at all. And then if they do, I've had people come over and tell me I'm not allowed to use them. What the fuck? I need to power up my laptop. Biatch! Not the asshole. Well, I am an asshole, but not always. I'm only an asshole when people are an asshole to me first. That's my rule.
Want to find out how they replied to Piotr.
Let's see. And actually, this last one's pretty vague. It just says, anything else that seems intuitively suspicious. So there's your kind of vague catch-all for the whole thing.
What is
I guess it comes back to what I was saying before about, like, intuitively suspicious is if somebody's obviously holding a raincoat closed like they're covering something up. Your intuition tells you there's something suspicious about that. You know, or the guy that's wearing heavy clothing in Miami Airport or something, there's just something intuitively suspicious about that. You know what I mean? Yeah, that kind of thing, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, that's like the global catch-all. I mean, it's not like these aren't hard and fast rules. These are like more like training. Just watch for these things. I'm sure they're telling the people, watch for these sort of suspicious things just to at least get their attention. Like, if you're like me and you're studying parts of the airport or whatever, just keep an extra eye on me. Maybe not harass me or cavity search me or anything. Just watch me. And then after a while, you realize, oh, he's just a geek. That's all, you know. That's all. Or if I'm sweating, it's because I just ate at one of those stupid little food cafes and now I'm about to shit my stomach out because of the nasty food that's been sitting there. That might be the reason I'm sweating, you think?
Call me on, but I don't think I can ever get out.
Yeah, right.
I can ever get hungry at something called the terminal snack bar.
Is that supposed to be predicting the future? Is that what that is? Yeah.
I know.
Is it?
I think it's George Carlin, actually.
Oh, well. Yeah, well, that's it for the... There you go. There's your lesson. So if you want to draw suspicion to yourself, I don't know why, because like I said, they don't joke around at the airports these days. But if you want to go in there, just, I guess, bounce your Adam's apple around, look back and forth with your eyes. Exactly.
Sweat profusely and wear an umbrella.
Oh, man. I'm going to have a little sip of sweet iced tea. and don't even get me started on what a rip-off those food places are. They jack the prices up, and they've been sitting there under the heat lamp for hours, and the employees are so freaking rude and sick, but I digress. I wonder what the screening process is for employees that have to come in and out of work. I wonder how strictly they're policed.
Oh, like everyone else, I actually saw a bunch of, but they get their own little express lane.
I don't think I've ever seen that before. Actually, like I think I might have seen that once before, but.
Well, it was at the, well, I'm not sure if it's different, but it was at the Providence Airport, and the Providence Airport, which is not actually in Providence, but we won't get into that. Yeah, and there was like, we got there early enough before the, because it closes at midnight and opens at 6 for flight operations, and I saw like a bunch of workers go through like special
TSA. Yeah, I think federal regulations require that they're screened also, but I've seen a lot of airport, I have seen that before, I can't remember which airport, but I think they've probably got like a back entrance too. They probably are screened, but it's not in public view, that's all. Because there's so many of them that the airports are so confusing. Mm-hmm. There's no way they're coming in the public entrance that everybody else is and walking through the same screening that everybody else is, even with the, if they have to with the fast lane. But I think there's a way they can park in employee parking, come in a back way where they're scanned and checked that way. And I wonder if they half-ass those searches because they all think they trust each other, know each other.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Because, you know, anybody in the... And the security industry will tell you that the majority of your hacks or break-ins or thefts or whatever the people want to say their company was hacked, the majority of them come from insiders. I'm just saying.
Yeah, one thing sure.
Yeah, that would be.
About, having
never seen. Has that ever happened historically? And post offices, of course, are famous for it. But I wonder if there's ever been a. Now, because they've always been pretty.
I have no idea.
I don't know. Anyway, let's get back on a security topic. You want to go to another article? Are we okay? Are we okay on time?
Yeah, sure. What do you want?
Oh,
what do you
crap! There's no way we're going to get through. Are you serious? Only 10 minutes left?
We only got about like another 10 minutes left.
Oh my gosh! Well, then you tell me. Where do you want to go from here?
Yeah, we've been gasbagging around for a while.
Encryption. Oh, the.
How about we talk about
encryption? Sure, we can do that one, I think. And actually, why don't you get started on that
data
one?
Secure.
Let me see here. Oh, yes. Yeah, actually, yeah. Okay, this one was, this is an article.
Oh, that's
from,
all your CSO,
this,
because
well, it was
I
the
can't
first,
read
first
that
one from
so
CSO
sure
also,
that.
Wasn't it? This is the chief security officer. I do not,
yeah,
really, it's
so,
one of those trade magazines. It's free
yeah,
for qualified
free
individuals, but, I'm not sure how strict they are on who they give it out to. So, I mean, a lot of these... DDP.
Well, I'm Mr. Ratchet of the...
CSO Online, all one word, CSOONLINE.com. I'm sure there's a thing you can fill out and say you want to subscribe to it. It's all of these trade magazines are, for me, they're skims. I skim through it, and the articles that strike my interest, I will read more thoroughly. And then the ones that really I find interesting are the ones like these that I pull out to talk about on the show or to bring up in the forums or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it's very hit and miss. But, yeah, there's been a couple good ones. This one is from November 2006. It's called How to Protect Mobile Data. And it's basically a discussion. And keep in mind, CSO Online is aimed, or CSO Magazine is aimed for chief security officers, so kind of, as much as I hate to admit it, people that are considered higher ups and management level executive type stuff. It's not nuts and bolts very much. It's kind of that, what do they call it when you write the introduction to your whole thing that's dumbed down for, yeah, the executive summary that's dumbed down for management. It's kind of that mindset. They don't want to know all the nuts and bolts a lot of times.
Executive
so,
summary.
This one, however, had a few things in it, but the general gist of the article is about protecting mobile data, and I'm sure all of our listeners can have lots of stories, and we're not going to go into listing a bunch of them, but stories where laptops were sold on eBay that still had sensitive data on them, either not erased at all or that were easily recovered, though hard drives weren't wiped properly, the data wasn't encrypted or anything like that. So there's lots of stories of people's laptops get stolen in airports quite a bit, or anywhere for that matter. If you lose your laptop, it gets stolen. If you don't properly wipe it before you sell it on eBay, that sort of thing. So this article kind of discusses that from a security officer standpoint, but it just had a few facts in here. And I since we are running on time, I'm just going to kind of skip because there's a couple parts that I highlighted, and I'm just going to kind of read them and actually like to hear what you have to say on some of them. For example, let's see, this first part is talking about full disk encryption, which I think has been a topic thread in the forums lately, full disk encryption or file-based encryption, and the article points out that Windows XP comes with file-based encryption built in, as do Linux and Mac OS X. It's tempting to use that, quote, free technology. Anything stored in specific PC folders, like my documents, is encrypted automatically. But this approach has a significant security flaw. It relies on users putting files in the encrypted folders, which is absolutely correct. If you don't put it in my documents, and I got to admit, I'm bad, at least on my, not on my laptop, but on my home computer, I just download everything to the desktop. And then move it later, because a lot of the stuff is just temporary. I open it, I unzip it, and then I delete it anyway. But for documents or something, from a security standpoint, from a business standpoint, yeah, you want them encrypted. But how do you enforce that? And again, from a think from a security officer standpoint, if you're trying to make your company more secure, how are you going to enforce a policy like that where it's up to the individual people to actually follow up on it and put it into those proper encrypted folders?
And how are you actually going to make sure that they're opening up on those folders because they're on laptops, and most laptops are stuck in some executive's home someplace?
Well, and then it goes on to say the other option is full disk encryption, which protects everything on the hard drive. With this approach, there's no uncertainty as to what data is actually encrypted. It takes human judgment out of the equation, so I can tell the regulators that the entire disk is encrypted, says blah, blah, director of security, blah, blah. I'm not going to drop any names because they might not want to be associated with a hacking show. Yeah, now they go on and say, you know, there's of course drawbacks to all these different things, and this one that they point out, the fear, and I'm quoting here, the fear widespread amongst users is that full disk encryption will slow laptop performance. That's a valid concern, I guess. Fortunately, laptops built in the past 3 years or so have the horsepower to run full disk encryption, the performance hit
if
is non-existent
you ask me all
from
my
the
concerns
user's
about full disk encryption or encryption in general,
blank.
Performance hit would be not on my list at all. My main concern, as both a user and as a person who would be probably the first one they would run to if something bad happened, is, you know, say Johnny or Susie user accidentally deletes their encryption key. Whoops.
Well, and that's where like single sign-on comes into play a lot. And boy, this topic we could really go into a lot more. But I guess we have for sake of time, we'll stick just to the article side of things, I guess. But this person again in the article points out that. Yes, a slowdown is noticeable, but just slightly. Where it's most noticeable is at system boot up and when the laptop hibernates, which, of course, makes sense. Now, a couple other, and here's some interesting things. I think they're not, most people might think about these if you sat down and thought about it, but I found them interesting. He talked about how, yes, even with all this said and done, that, and I'll read the quote here, in all cases, data is decrypted when moved to CD and DVD media, since the usual goal of copying data to external devices is to make it available to systems that may not have the same encryption tools, which is definitely interesting to think about. You know, you can have all that encryption on your hard drive and everything, but if you ever email something to somebody, or copy it to a USB drive that's not encrypted, or burn it to a CD or a DVD. The whole point, like he says, is that that's to make it shareable. Well, you got to be careful what you put on those and maintain them as securely as you would maintain your hard drive. You can have all the system security on the hard drive itself, but if you're going to burn a copy and forget it on the table at the airport lobby, you kind of shot yourself in the ass there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true. Or whatever your encryption of choice. Encryption is good in any form. So, and thumb drives is something they mentioned too, which is another topic of, you know, people getting data out of companies. Some vendors offer encrypted thumb drives. The encryption works only with their hardware. So that's another interesting thing. And they also go and talk about the BlackBerry, which comes with sufficiently strong full disk encryption, which I did not know that, as well as email encryption, not to mention remote management features such as the ability for IT to wipe out the contents of a stolen or lost device.
That's
cool. Yeah, I know. I got to say, that is pretty cool right there. So those are like the things that I highlighted from the article. So, I mean, we can kind of expand on it a little bit in general now, but those are the things that I underlined as interesting points.
Oh, yeah, totally. But speaking of BlackBerry,
you know, security is only as good as you can enforce it.
Her BlackBerry to do the whole lock the person out if she can't enter her password three times, and because, hey, that's what she wanted, so I'm not going to disagree with her, but I'm waiting for her to come out and say, I locked myself out of my BlackBerry. I forgot my password.
Mm-hmm.
Which point I'm going to say, call the help desk, not my problem.
Right.
No, she's okay, but just like I told
her,
don't forget your password.
Call someone who cares, look.
Smack my head going, this is the person who can't remember her password a couple of times after she comes back from vacation.
Well, right. Funny you mention that. That's one of the articles I actually wanted to work on. I wanted to type up for. Actually, I was going to submit it maybe to CSO Magazine or something, but I digress. But yeah, I mean, again, the overall point is, first of all, it's been an ongoing... there's been an ongoing concern lately of all these devices, particularly USB keys. And there's been several stories of security companies, like I love the one where they went out
to a
big company and dropped USB keys in a parking lot that had viruses or backdoor stuff on them. That's great. I love that. I thought that was brilliant. But it just shows, you know, that you can go in there and on a USB key you can, A, do a lot of offensive attacking damage, passive sniffing damage, or... you know, just somebody with ill intent, you know, so when your disgruntled employees can come in and copy, you're going to have the hard drives encrypted, the server encrypted, everything backed up on an encrypted SAN device. But if he puts in the USB key, copies it over and takes it home with him and puts it on the global interweb, what good is all that security and all that money you've got on there? So a lot of companies, that is a valid concern. That's right.
In your armor.
There's lots of different ways to do it. Yeah, I know. I was thinking the missing link, but that kind of goes caveman style, I guess. The missing link, Java man, Neanderthal man. There's a great thing on Discovery Channel this month, by the way, about that exact topic. But I digress once again. All right, well, I think that's about it. Yeah, I was just saying that not only USB keys, that's the big thing that stemmed interest in this lately, but... you know, burning CDs is so easy now. Employees, most computers are coming with CD burners, DVD burners. Yeah. A lot of companies are starting to buy them without that. Yeah, a lot of companies are worried about it, that they're buying systems now that do not have CD and DVD burners, and there's a comeback on regular CD-ROM drives because of that. Not a lot, but a few of them that are really, really security conscious are starting to crack down a little bit with that.
Oh, iPods are the great secret
and
white whale.
iPods, of course.
They're all ready to like go, oh, iPods are horrible. And places. Okay.
You know, I do have one iPod topic before we close out here. It's 30 seconds. It's called I hate iPods, and I hate even sharing this, but it is kind of cool. It's called iSubway Maps, and it's basically subway maps that you can download for different cities. It's at iPodSubwayMaps.com, all one word. Offers free downloadable transit maps for 23 U.S. and international cities for viewing on your photo-enabled iPod. In most cases, chopped into smaller.
Oh, really?
Is it? Or did I actually have another side of the week? I have a different side of the week. Are we at side of the week time? Yeah. Yeah, because I think this side of the week is really uber cool. because this is something, see, Not Theory and I have had this thing we've wanted to do for the last couple of years now. We wanted to go to, I don't know if you probably remember the significance, I don't know if our listeners remember the significance of Mink, Louisiana.
No, not really.
Does that ring a bell? It was the last city in the United States to finally have fiber cable pulled into it. So it's this little, small, backwater town in Louisiana, and we always thought how cool and how funny it would be. We wanted to go, like, set up a hacker commune or something, or we wanted to go down there, and there's, like, a population, I think, of maybe 14 or something like that, or some bizarre small number. We wanted to go down there and basically just buy it. Like, we're going to buy all of your houses. We're going to set up our own city hall, our own police, our own government. We're going to buy it, and this is going to be Hacker Town or something like that. I don't know if he wants me sharing this idea on the air, but I just did anyway. Well, this site of the week is kind of like that. I mean, it's a pipe dream. I mean, we're ever actually going to be able to go through with that, but and think of the scrutiny we would get if we did. Well, this is kind of like it. This is an article from, I think this was from Wired Magazine this month, I think, or maybe it was last month. It's called Webocracy Island, and the site of the week, it is Tribe Wanted, TribeWanted.com, all one word, Tribe Wanted. You pay $230 a year, you get membership in a global tribe located on the undeveloped island of Voro Voro, just a short connecting flight, jeep ride, and boat from Fiji's Nadi International Airport. And basically what you're doing is becoming not exactly a citizen, kind of sort of a citizen, this virtual, real, non-real but unreal place. I don't know how to describe it. I guess go to the website and check it out because it's kind of a cool thing where you actually get voting rights and determine what they do with the money that they've got and how it gets spent and things like that, which is kind of a cool thing. Yeah! So that's our site of the week. If I jumped the gun, was it side of the week time? Yeah, we're doing side of the week.
No, I don't know. Do we have any announcements?
Other than the little me whining and bitching about the server and housekeeping at the beginning,
well,
I think that's about it.
Oh, we should have Bruder's deleted the Jenny scan, so go contact him.
Oh, yeah, we didn't announce the Jenny
done?
Scan is done. Yeah, that's awesome. We actually...
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
oh.
It is done. He and I did it on, Monday... Actually, he finished it Sunday night, sent it to me, and I kind of glanced through it. We both put it up on Doc Droppers. It is officially on Doc Droppers, locked and loaded, final version, formatted and everything properly, and I think he posted it in the forums on Monday as well. So Jenny Scan 2007 is now in the books, so we will do it again next year. So, yeah, I'm glad you remembered that. I'm glad we thought about that, because when he mentioned it on the air, and I said that was definitely a cool project, and I like it, and it's fun, it's something everybody can do. And I need to give a shout-out, if I may, to the BinRev 561 meeting, the guys down at BR561, Blunderbuss, Tabiz, of course, Stank Deasy down there, actually Downer was down there, which was really cool, a whole bunch of people. They postponed their meeting a week. Meetings are normally the third Friday, but I was going to be down there for the holidays, so they bumped it back to a week late, which was cool to accommodate me, so I appreciate that, and had a great time down there, Cloak Dagger, a bunch of us. So I went to the BinRev meeting, and then, of course, to the traditional GinRev 561 meeting. After the BinRev meeting ends, they proceed to head over to a Irish pub, and the GinRev meeting begins, which is pretty much the same thing, except drinking becomes involved. So, and actually, I'm not much of a drinker, so we just basically continued the meeting, sat around talking, and had a free Wi-Fi access. So we hopped on, and I had my GPS device, and we found a geocache right there in the parking lot. How weird was, how bizarre is that?
That's kind of freaky.
We didn't actually find it, though. That's a funny thing. We knew where it was, we were standing on top of it, but it was a microcache, which, if you know what that means, it's tiny, tiny. It means it's the size of a pill bottle or smaller. And this one was apparently the smallest one on geocaching.com. We never found it.
It was a pin. You got to find a pin in the haystack.
I guess so. Well, where I was digging, I got a handful of roaches, and I said, fuck that, I'm not going any deeper.
Ew.
Yeah, tell me about it.
I don't know who sent shouts out, so I'll just send shouts out to you because I'm lazy.
Okay, fine, that'll do.
Yeah. closing music tonight is Ghouls and Ghosts Poltergeist Remix on ocremix.org. And, yeah, that sounded pretty interesting.
All right, hopefully I didn't go on too many tangents and drag us over the limit.
It's freestyling, And plus, like, limits are, like, you know, I'm starting to, like, you know, completely go out of the box here with the limit. So, actually, it's kind of good. I think we're kind of on time here, so.
Good. Works out perfectly.
Yeah. All right. So, as always, we will see you next week. Same hack time.
Same hack channel.